Hello, and welcome back to New Books in Biblical Studies. This is Philip Michael Sherman, a host of the channel. Our guest today is Professor Hannah Tervonatko, the author of Denying Her Voice, The Figure of Miriam in Ancient Jewish Literature. Hannah Tervonatko analyzes the treatment and development of Miriam as a literary character in ancient Jewish texts, taking into account all the references to this figure preserved in ancient Jewish literature from the exilic period to the early 2nd century. These texts demonstrate that the picture of Miriam preserved in the ancient Jewish texts is richer than the Hebrew Bible suggests. The results provide a contradictory image of Miriam. On the one hand, she becomes a tool of Levitical politics, whereas on the other, she continues to enjoy a freer role. People continue to interpret earlier literary traditions in light of new situations, and interpretations varied in different contexts. Second, in light of post-structuralist literary studies that treat texts as reflections of specific social situations, Tervonatko argues that the treatment of Miriam in ancient Jewish literature reflects mostly a reality in which women had little space as active agents. Despite the general tendency to allow women only little room, the references to Miriam suggest that at least some prominent women may have enjoyed occasional freedom. Welcome, Professor Tervonatko.
Thank you very much, Philip.
Our first question is always about the author's intellectual background and how you came to be interested in the study of the Hebrew Bible and, in this case, early Jewish texts. How did you find yourself interested in biblical literature and specifically the figure of Miriam?
Thank you. Well, I think like if I answer honestly this question, I have to go quite back in time. My earliest memory of interpretation of a biblical text was in mid-80s in my native Finland, where I was born and raised. And there was a big debate in the Lutheran Church, which is the biggest denomination in Finland, about opening the ministry for women. And I remember that biblical texts were used both as pro and contra, whether women should be in ministry and act as ministers in congregation. And somehow, even if for somebody who was not into Bible at that time, the public conversations came out as something very interesting, and they were debated in the media, and you heard people talking about it. So that's sort of like when I remember the first time the contents of biblical texts being debated, and they got my interest. The other thing was that I was raised in a congregation where the two closest pastors who I was in contact with, both of them were biblical scholars, and for me, an open interpretation of Bible and even historical critical perspectives brought for the interpretation of the texts was quite regular. So then when I years later I ended up in a university and I started to study for my degree, it was quite shocking to realize that this was not at all like the regular interpretation, and there were people for whom historical critical perspectives already as such were controversial. So having said that, from the beginning when I went to university, it was clear for me that I wanted to study the texts further. And then when it came the time that I had to sign for a seminar, there was my professor led a seminar about the Qumran manuscripts. So we were invited, the students were invited to make a finished translation and commentary on specific texts. And I love that. I was like, wow, this is totally new material and what it has to offer. So yeah, those things all together, like maybe some initial questions of my own about the biblical interpretation, but then like this really new material that offered questions that had not been posed before. Where I come from.
Can you introduce us to Miriam, who she is and why she's such an interesting figure to study?
Well, Miriam, most of the people, when I start to talk about my work, they would remember Miriam as the sister of Moses, mostly Moses. Interestingly, not so much of Aaron, and perhaps thoughts go to the crossing of the Sea of Reeds easily. I ended up working with Miriam a little bit coincidentally. I had a couple of years break after finishing my master's degree, and when I went to the doctoral program, I said immediately that I wanted to work on women in the biblical texts. And my supervisor, Armin Lange, one of the first assignments he gave me was to work on the Qumran text 4Q365, which preserves this extended Song of Miriam. And when I then, working with that text, started to look up all the different references to Miriam that from the Second Temple era, I found out that there was plenty of material. And I still remember the exact words of Armin Lange when we were talking about my paper, and he said, "Anna, to me this starts to look like a PhD dissertation." So that's how it started. So why she is a good figure to study? Because there are plenty of references to Miriam if we go to the Second Temple era. So in that sense, I think it's a not exceptional case, but to write an entire dissertation, you need some text to work on. For my project, she was very good. It was a good figure because the references that we have are very different by their literary genres, and they preserve different information about Miriam. So also in that way, this topic turned out to be that you have a quite rich image of a female figure.
At the beginning of your work, you suggest that ancient Jewish literature requires some clarification. And in this regard, a lot of what your book does is push us to think about biblical characters not bound by the biblical canon. So could you say something about why that was an important sort of methodological principle for you to think about Miriam as more than a biblical character, but an ancient Jewish literary figure who stretched way beyond the canon?
Yes, I think I have two answers for that. Well, first of all, I'm very much supportive for the new, new scholarship that suggests that for the texts that were composed before the canon, we should not call them biblical especially not canonical, but avoid these terms that are more anachronistic, or if one wants to use them, be very specific about the use. But in my work, as I wanted to look at the what references to Miriam are there in all ancient Jewish texts, these later categories are not helpful. So I wanted to emphasize that, and which I've also in my other works, I'm very much in a favor of this aspect, of given all different texts similar importance when we don't know exactly what was more central text or more important in antiquity. So that is a sort of somehow I would say a methodological principle what I tend to have in all my work, not just here. But I think when we talk about women's history, it's of particular importance because in many cases we deal with a few references. Like there are not entire narratives about women, and even to make this question about women's possible lives, it's very hard to reconstruct in light of the very marginal references we have. So I'm thinking that here, if we want to make this question, well, which is also one of the key points, what do we want to ask? But if we want to ask what was the interpretation of Miriam, for me, it just makes sense that then we take into account all the possible references and do not give importance to just some of them. And I would suggest that this would be the case with any other, I say this in the quotations, like a marginal figure that that when you take into account the broader material of text, you somehow open possibilities for not just the more interpretations, but just the more complex image, more coherent image even of what was this figure in antiquity.
Before we look at some of the images of Miriam that you draw out of these texts, I wonder if you could explain why you think intertextuality or dialogism are really sort of important tools for making sense of these texts, like, as you mentioned, come from different genre, different time frames, and very often are utilized to make very different sort of ideological or theological points. Why do intertextuality and dialogism, those two particular methods, if we want to call them methods, I suppose, how do they help get at this story?
Yeah, I was looking for some concepts of that could be tools to speak about the possible relationships between the texts more specifically than when we say that they're maybe some interconnection or they are somehow related. And especially when we talk about these traditions that are literary traditions that are repeated in different texts, that they somehow suggest that there is a dependency, but we cannot see that or we cannot prove that. So I wanted to. I was looking for a concept that would somehow allow me to suggest such connections. And when I so first intertextuality, which has been used in literary studies, but I thought that concept as per se does not allow me to take into account the context or the societies that have produced the texts. So then when I got to know about Bakhtin's dialogism, that not just suggest that the texts between themselves are in a dialogue with one another, but that there's a dialogue that goes to the context where they are authored and produced, meaning that that these contexts always leave traces in the texts.
Well, you list three sort of categories, broad categories of texts to explore with regard to Miriam that start sometime from the Persian period all the way through the Hellenistic and into the Roman period. How would you say Miriam is represented in the earliest biblical texts that we have? And when would you date those texts to? And what do you think the social context is of those very earliest mentions, if you want to go out on a limb there? Always dangerous to ask a biblical scholar to date a text. I know.
Oh, wow. Yes, that was a big question. I think, as you have noticed, I tend to make these broad categories, like Persian era, the earliest text, because, and I know many biblical scholars here would date especially the Song of Miriam much earlier, which I think is possible, but the way the texts are preserved to us, I tend to like the to give a bit later dates. So that's why I didn't date anything before the Persian era. If we think about like the image of Miriam that raises from the earliest texts, like of course there's the famous reference to the Miriam the prophetess. And almost parallelly, we hear in Micah 6:4 about Miriam being presented next to Moses and Aaron as one of the early Israelites' leaders. So especially in light of those two texts, I think it raises many interesting questions about women in antiquity and their social role and their possible leadership role. But almost as important or as strong in these texts is, of course, the image of the sister, which as such is very interesting. presentation of a female figure, that Miriam, unlike many other women in the Bible, is mostly known as the sister figure, not as someone's wife or spouse or daughter that you would encounter much more frequently. So what does it mean that she's a sister? Does this mean that because that she has some kind of a loser connection with the family, there is no male figure under whose authority Miriam falls automatically? These are some directions. Another interesting reference to Miriam is, of course, the Numbers 12, where she confronts Moses and challenges Moses. That did God only speak through Moses? Didn't he speak through us too? And this text is very interesting. Tells a lot about the biblical interpretation, because in the later references or later Jewish literature that somehow refers back to this passage, the conflict is almost always erased as if it didn't happen, or if it did happen, the reasons for it are not repeated because, it's somehow a difficult passage.
So what happens to Miriam as we move into the Hellenistic and Roman periods? What happens to her in a book like Jubilees, or how is she treated in an author like Philo? Are there points of continuity? Is she further marginalized? How do later authors take up some of these stories and use them to craft their own narratives around these traditions?
Shall we just go like one by one, different eras, or how would you like to go? Okay, well, if I say something about the Hellenistic era, as you mentioned, if we stay within the canon, like Chronicles is an interesting text because it lists Miriam as one of the sons, like Bani, of Amram. And the way her name appears next to the other sons, Moses and Aaron, it looks almost, or I argue, that it's a later addition to that passage. That if you compare it to the lists in general that appear in Chronicles, the way this name appears, the Miriam, it seems to differ from the general style of the book. I wonder what are the reasons that the name, if we accept that it was a later addition, what are the reasons that this name was added? Is it because Miriam became so important, or people knew that there was another child of Amram whose name should be mentioned there? Perhaps because there are other lists, as in Numbers, where the name is next to Aaron and Moses. So for all these reasons, but nevertheless, I find it remarkable that this name is there. If we look at the Jubilees, it's another interesting case because there are studies about women in Jubilees, and it's generally accepted that Jubilees emphasizes some female figures. But most of them are the Genesis mothers that have an important role as the spouses for the patriarchs, and the author has the emphasizes the specific lineages in the text. So it's also important to show who's the mother of each important male figure. But in contrast to all these references, like Miriam does not appear like that, and but she's in the context of when Moses is placed in the basket in the River Nile, so Exodus 2, and this text then mentions my sister Miriam watched over. No, sorry, your sister, because then there's another text which is almost contemporary from Ptolemaic Egypt, Exagoge, which also mentions Miriam in the same literary context, Exodus 2. So we can roughly say at least that from this era on, perhaps 2nd century BCE, it's well known and accepted that the sister figure, the anonymous sister of Exodus 2, is now Miriam in the texts, because that's what the authors write, that Miriam was there. The same motif is present in Philo and in Josephus too. Philo only talks about the sister, so similarly to Exodus 2, he does not mention who is the sister. But then Philo uses the, well, we know that Philo, often when he talks about female figures, they are not specific women or how should I say, everyday women, but they are more symbols for themes that he deals with in his texts. And when he writes about Numbers 12, then Miriam appears as symbol for irrational behavior, or somehow foolishness, one could say. But then there's an opposite interpretation when he talks about Miriam in the context of the Vita Contemplativa, where Miriam is a symbolic leader for the female members of the therapeutic community. So there, Philo talks about two chorus, the chorus of men and the chorus of women. So men are led by Moses, and the women are led by Miriam. This is also a quite interesting passage because, he makes this separation that the men are led, and women are led by different figures, and nominates Miriam as women's leader. Maybe he there thinks about Exodus 15 and where all the women follow Miriam. But of course, in Philo's text, it's always clear that Moses is superior to Miriam, also in this context, and elsewhere where he refers to the same passage, so that he seemingly accepts female leadership, but only to a certain extent, one could say. Shall I continue about Josephus?
Well, there's a particular text I really would be interested in hearing you talk about, particularly given its focus on leadership in general, the book that's known as Biblical Antiquities of Pseudo-Philo. How does the author Pseudo-Philo deal with the figure of Miriam, given such a strong focus in that work on leaders and the nature of leadership?
Yes, that's a very, very interesting text, and I keep on going back to it. Because here there's the author who we don't know. The text has been attributed to Philo in some medieval manuscripts, and thus the pseudo Philo, which is not very helpful. But you're right, leadership is a very central theme in the book, and the anonymous author writes about Moses's birth. It's also a re-narration of Exodus 2 in some way, but takes this account quite far from the version of the Hebrew Bible. For instance, by adding the passage about Miriam, how Miriam has a dream vision about Moses' birth. So one could think that that Miriam has a vision in the night about the figure dressed in white who's who stands on the river. And one could think, and it has been suggested, that perhaps the author here tries to somehow answer the question that what was Miriam's prophecy about? Because in the Bible, we don't know. Miriam is called the prophetess, but it remains problematic that what is the prophecy about when we don't know? We don't know. We should know. So the later authors have somehow tried to answer this question with their own narratives. And the interesting thing here is that in that same passage in Liber Antiquitatum Biblicarum is that the parents do not believe her. So in somehow she stands out in that context as the chosen person who has the true information, which is not recognized. But of course, being a later narrative, I also like this kind of play with the audience. Like, of course, audience who reads that story knows all the time that she's right. So does she, so. I like to think that is this somehow that she comes out in that context as, yeah, as a matter of fact, as like many prophetic figures who are not believed. Like we think about Jeremiah, for instance, that isn't that almost like a topos in a prophetic text that you have a prophecy, but if it is a real prophecy, one should not believe immediately. And I think that comes across very strong in the LAB in that context. There's also another reference to Miriam in the same text where they list gifts that the Israelites received during their time in the wilderness. And this text states that God gave them water for Miriam's sake. It's not entirely clear where this comes from, but of course, like Miriam's well, the cup of Miriam has a long reception history ever since. But it's possible that here the author may have had in mind Numbers 20, the passage where Miriam first dies in the first verse. And right after that, the Israelites get water, that there's a water from the rock. So it's possible that the author of LAB makes a connection with the two passages, that the water was received by Miriam's sake. But nonetheless, as it's the first time that specific tradition is attributed to Miriam, I think it does say something about the importance of this figure, or the attempts to even to give more standing for her, perhaps.
Well, one of the things I really appreciated about the work is the sort of the textual work is very detailed and very methodical, and you move through all of these far more references to Miriam than I think I would ever have thought existed in this body of literature, just if you had sort of asked me about it off the cuff. But there's also another story that you're telling about sort of the socio-cultural context that are producing all of these texts. And I wonder if there's a way to, without oversimplifying maybe, but boil it down to, there's this early vision of female leadership, and here's perhaps how it changes over the course of 5 centuries or so, and sort of using Miriam then as an index for what we can know about female autonomy or the roles of women in Jewish antiquity and more broadly speaking in the ancient world. I know that's a huge sort of setup there, but maybe if you can talk a little bit about behind the textual work, what's the larger story that you're trying to tell here about women in Jewish antiquity?
Well, it's interesting. Every time I'm kind of asked that, did you, like almost every time I talk about my work, people ask me, do you study women because you're a woman yourself? And I think that if I'm completely honest, I have to answer that yes, because I think that for many people this is of importance, and women like to know what's happening with the women in the texts. Yeah, like there are two things that I want to mention. Like one is that I think that of course it's true that when we look at the Bible, we look at the reference to women. There are not that many. Like they are clearly marginal if we compare like all the instances where a female figure is present with all the male figures. There's a clear imbalance with them, And I think that one thing is that we can change this imbalance is by bringing those marginal figures into the center of our study. And that's a little bit what I've tried to do here, that if we put them under the lens, like instead of always accepting it and taking this as the starting point for all our conversations, like women were marginal, women are not there, we will keep on hearing the same story all over and over again. But I think what I wanted to show in this work is that if we turn this question around and say that, okay, I will take this figure that whom we do not know so much about, but I focus entirely on that figure, what kind of information comes out from that study? And I think this is one way somehow to try to recuperate the long history of interpretation that we've had, and even to try to change the perspective we have for these texts. What about the cultures? Absolutely right. Like, what can these texts tell about the cultures? Well, we have to be quite careful how we pose that question. Like, first of all, maybe like my very broad first answer to this question already shows that I think we have to accept that not all the texts answer all our questions. Even if I have a question, so my burning question has been like, all right, where are the women? What happened to them? But this has not been the question that the authors of these texts may have had. But if they didn't have that question in their mind, we cannot like draw too many conclusions as we've done. Like, okay, women were not there, so it means that they were not important. There's something which is not sound in this logic. So at least I think like when we bring women to the center of our study is one way to shift the perspective. But then again, like when you think about each text and the context where they were authored or where they were born, to what extent can we know what the authors wanted to say or even to place the text in a specific context? I really think that here we are might be in the limits of the biblical studies. We often cannot answer that question.
Yeah, I really like some of the limited response that you feel that we can get from these texts. I mean, I think, you know, to go back to a text like Pseudophilo for a second, where Miriam is given this role as a prophetess and is sort of imported into the narrative in Exodus, early part of Exodus, it's difficult from our perspective. At least I feel the difficulty with knowing whether or not this reflects an openness to female prophecy on the part of the author and therefore a broader social or religious context for that kind of activity, or whether this is exegetical, whether this is, you know, someone not thinking about those issues at all, but trying to make the text synchronized with everything else that they know about the biblical text, or if it can be both in some level. And so I appreciate sort of the, here's the question I have, here's what I really wish the text would tell me, here's what I think it might be telling me, but here's also the limit that I see. And I wonder sort of in looking at the work that you see for yourself in the future, is this a broader topic to which you see yourself returning, or do you feel like, okay, I have touched on Miriam, so I can close that chapter? Or is this still a question that you see yourself coming back to? How do we find women in Jewish antiquity? Where are they, and how would we know if we found them?
If I can just very quickly comment what you said in the beginning about the, can we say anything what the author, what was their standing or their take, for instance, on female prophecy? I think in the case of Pseudophilo, if we compare that, for instance, to a contemporary Josephus, who attributes almost the same vision to Miriam's father, at least I think I think it's fair to say that we see that there are different takes on it. And somebody calls pseudo-Philo like a feminist. I would not say that. But at the same time, it does say something about the authorial intentions. Like if in one text, the same vision or almost the same vision is attributed to the father figure and in another text to the daughter. I don't know if it says anything about what the author thinks about female prophecy, but at least I tend to think that the minimum we can say is that there is no problem to re-narrate this. There is no problem to say that even if this is to create this, we don't know even how new, but new to us, literary tradition, and pass that forward. Okay, my future work. I think I have now shifted to work on something else. I still work on prophecy and divination, but my main focus is not on biblical figures on female biblical figures in this moment. But I do think that this is a long project, and I will continue contributing to the field, but not perhaps for taking a break for now, because it was a very long project, and I think that I want to do other things as well. But I do see the need. I see that, like I was saying, that there is this big gap. So there's a gap which is partially created by the text, and then there's the gap that has been created by the interpretative history to bring more voices to the field and somehow like recover figures from the past. And I would like to encourage many people to take such a task and to investigate what kind of stories can these even marginal figures to tell. Yeah, so I'm it's not just the scholarly work, but I do think it's partially like when I got interested in the women in the early Jewish literature. Of course, it was somehow a question of women's history and even of equal opportunities or equality, in the sense that, okay, if we accept that half of the world's population was women also in antiquity, not just at our times, where are all these people? So, of course, if I think like such a project that I also have other motivations to do that. Of course, I will continue being interested in it and contributing in the future, even when my main focus is somewhere else.
Once again, the book is Denying Her Voice, The Figure of Miriam in Ancient Jewish Literature. Thank you, Hannah Tervonatko.
Thank you very much.